Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Dope Black Dads podcast, a place where we are changing the narrative and having progressive conversations about black fathers, as well as creating a safe digital space for the community.
This is the Dope Black Dad podcast. My name is Marvin Harrison. Today, we're very excited and passionate and overruled. I've been trying to create a frame with my plant in it, and in doing so, I think I've achieved neither of the things I'm trying to achieve. There's now just a stray stem in my eye. But it's like tickling my bald head. It's like... I finally feel like someone loves me. good morning, brothers. We have Marlon and Marvin back here again. Do you feel like the Triple M thing should be a brand? Should we work on that as a thing?
Yeah, I like that.
I think we should.
I don't know if you've got Morley's in your ends, but they got the Triple M burger in Morley's.
Nah, bruv. Sorry, explain that to us. We live in classy areas. What does that mean?
South London for this. Maybe it's more of a Morley's South London thing, but yeah, the Morley's chicken shop. One of their famous burgers is the Triple M burger, which is basically a ripoff of a Big Mac. But they call it a triple.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
we should do that. Marvin, Marlon, and Marvin.
Like bro, we can come out like New Edition, bro, and just be like, beep.
it's the shoulder fling.
Yeah.
And they always do it, and they turn.
I'm down for that, man. I need that kind of money as well. I need that touring money so we could do stadiums.
Yeah.
Do you know what's really funny here? Is I don't think about this podcast as anything other than like a conversation with you guys. I forget it goes out into the world. I forget people listen to it, and I forget that people write about it. So this article came out on last week in Australia about 10 or 9 dad podcasts you should follow. I was like, Australia, they probably said something wild. What did they say about me? That's the only reason why I clicked on the link, by the way, is to say, is this some racist shit? then I go on it.
Who is it today?
This fantastic conversation between black fathers. I was like, Australia's trying to come up? What?
Boy.
So, in my view, yeah, because Chris Bex is there, who's obviously our brother and friend and wonderful dope black dad. And I don't know Australia deeply, but I've always seen it as one of those societies that are like, it's like Margate, but hot. Like, just like, Margate's nice, but like, they have some views. They may not be as welcoming. Like, it's a bit of that. It's like where UKIP started, but also people might be really nice. So when they actually wrote about us and put us in there next to Dave Berry, who's like a presenting legend. If you are in your 30s, you probably grew up with him on T4 and, you know, teaching kids about music and bands when black people weren't allowed on TV very often. So, you know, our podcast is in good company. And I was like, people listen to this. Wow. Last week I said some wild shit though.
They still listening? They still here?
There's a complete disconnect to reality. You know what it is, yeah? It's because our podcast is huge. It gets loads of awards and attention, yeah? But it's not like a thing where if I say something, I get like trending topic back at me next day. Like there's enough people that someone will be like, so Marvin, tell me about, someone might in my life, one person might say that, like, oh, what's going on? But everyone else just like, oh, you do a podcast, it's great. And then it's only when I do like Zoom calls with work colleagues and they're like, we love your podcast. And I'm like, because we're gonna talk about DEI right now. What did you hear? What episode? is this the one where we talk about white allyship and I went on a 7-minute monologue about... Right. Okay. So in many ways, I don't watch what I say because I just believe everything I say comes from a place of truth. So I mean it, I think, you know, and if I get it wrong, I say sorry. And if I don't, then I meant it. And So when you do a podcast and every people listen, sometimes I get in my comfort. I forget, you know, I actually, you know what it is? I listen to it with my little sister. She's not little, she's 30. But I listen to it with her in a car. And it was one of those episodes where you're just talking a little bit about your family, like you're just touching on your family. And you're like, oh yeah, shit, I'm talking about my family. And you're my family. And you never listen to my podcast. But she started busting up. She thinks we're hilarious. We're cool to 30-year-olds, guys.
That's good.
My mum listened to the first one I did. And there were some gems that she didn't know. There were things in there that she actually didn't know. She was like, you know, I never knew how challenging that time was for you because you wear it so well.
Man.
Yeah, she said, I knew it was you were under duress, but I didn't realize how painful it was.
So this is why I love mothers, yeah, because it's like they turn up to your first football game and they'll watch your first football game with a lot of passion. They'll break some, they'll do a madness. They'll get on a bus for an hour. They will carry some mad suitcase. They'll do a whole bunch of stuff to get there for your first game. Love it to death and be like, that was my contribution to your development. I watched the first one. I was like, no, I saw you play. I did. And I feel like, yeah, and I'm not saying this is what your mum did, but I feel like, yeah, this is what, yeah, this is a part of parenting where you realize you've got to cover the bases. It's like, let me just check in. I care about the shit you're doing. This is my check-in. I heard it. I saw it. It was good. But it's you can't get in their rotation because I think when you get to 50, yeah, you just stop doing shit you don't want to do. Like, it's violent. It's like, you want me to, oh, so you made me a painting for my fridge. Okay.
I cussed him. I'm sorry. I'm like, what is this? Where the sun? Why is the sun down here? Everyone's going to burn. Why is that pigeon so big? Who fits in that house? I'm the same size as the house.
I think that's good, man. We should be more honest with our children. Yeah, it will help them. Then they go back to the drawing board. Otherwise, they feel like every single thing that they put their finger to is incredible and exactly. Amazing. It's an inspiration. It's like, no, you're not. You came from my balls. Yeah, no, you're not an inspiration.
and then we get to university, don't we? And we get people that think they can sing at talent shows because their parents told them they can sing all the way. And then they stand up and sing and we're like, nah,
bro. Nah. That is the most sung song, at 100 talent shows ever in the 90s and 2000s. And it's impossible to sing. Like, if you try to sing it, yeah, you find yourself doing bare things you're not meant to be doing. It's a physical attraction. That is my satisfaction.
You know, the weirdest thing is that people pick up different ad-libs all the time. Yeah. So if you sing it, someone be like, I didn't know there was a...
And if I ever fall in love, so true. Like, they go in. I love that song. Just for the,
and they double, I will. All of you move.
Listen, black people, certain songs don't sing, bruv. Don't sing Stevie. Don't sing Boyz II Men. Don't sing Michael Jackson. Let go, man.
Allow it.
Don't sing Beyonce either, you know. People feel like Beyonce is like, no, because my voice, the way her voice is and my voice. Nah, bruv, leave her, Jennifer Hudson, Mariah Carey, Whitney Houston. Leave them alone.
You can't hold those notes. Allow it.
Trick Daddy, he tried to come for Beyonce the other day and say that she couldn't sing.
Black men need to learn to shut the fuck up.
You don't want to mess with the beehive as well, man. They don't pull no punches.
Bro, especially when you're on drugs. Stop it, bruv. You know what it is, I hate people that don't like Beyonce so much, because then I know we will never get along. Because in my mind, I'm striving for excellence, bruv. Man, I want to do impactful things. And you get these little people who basically don't even have a B-tech in performance will sit there and be like, oh my God, the thing about her is that she's got too much fans. And people just like too loyal. It's like, bro, shut up, bro. What do you do?
What do you sing? Sing now.
Take my car payment, bro. Move from me, bro. Get off my phone. You know what? One day, the most angry I've ever been in my adult life, This is an embarrassing story, but okay. So basically, this is like 5 years ago, okay? This is why I actually went into therapy. This is the moment where I was like, bro, I need to do something. So I'm in Hackney, And Hackney Town Hall is where they do like all the administration as well for like all your council type stuff. So I get a car fine, which was a bullshit car fine. Basically, I move from one part of Hackney to another and then you have to get a different coded pass for your car. So I'm vexed already because I'm like, I'm parking on the cusp of one boulder to the other and I'm walking 10 minutes to my house until they transfer my pass around. So I'm already in my feelings that I have to do this 10-minute walk every time I want to get to my car. And bearing in mind, that means if I'm going to the supermarket, I got my kids with me. So I'm just like, this is long. So one side is like zone K and one side is zone H. So I'm supposed to be in K. I park in H because it's the other side of the road. Didn't pay attention. So I get a ticket. I'm like, cool. I'm going to do this. So I'm walking by the town hall. So I'm like, do you know what? Let me just go inside. I'm not going to do it on the phone. I'm just going to walk in and pay. Be quicker. I walk in, and then while I'm there, I'm like, oh, then I can also get my permit. Of course I can. So I go in, I pay the fine, and I'm like, oh, I want to get my permit. And then she was like, okay. And then she went back somewhere, just like there. And it might have been 5:50 p.m. in the evening. So she's gone back there, and she's gone back there for like 8 minutes. And she just goes, oh, I need something, something. So I was like, oh, okay, let me just quickly go to my car and come back. And then, so I go back to my car to get this thing. I come back, and she says, oh, we're closed. I was like, what do you mean you're closed? She was like, yeah, it's closed. It's we close at 6. It's now 2 minutes to, but we're closed. I've shut the systems down. So I was like, but you saw me say I was going to go to the thing. You saw me say that, right? And I told you where my car was and you said it's cool. And now I'm back and you're telling me it's closed. And I now need my permit now that I can get it. Cause now I'm vexed about, I got my car park. I've, you know, I'm walking 10 minutes. Now I've had the solution. She said it's here. I can take it, but I need one thing to prove it. And then I'm just like, why did you do that? And then she started giving me such attitude. Yeah. Not cause my energy hadn't got there yet, but she gave me such energy of like, I am an authority here. I have closed my systems. Move. And I was just like, and I just remember, because it was 80% of this was all internal, by the way. So I'm flipping out, yeah. And my wife at the time is just staring at me, like knowing that this is, because I have like a, there's a seasoning to my destruction. It's like, I go so quiet that it's like, he's really angry. Because this is not, because when you're angry, it's like, oh, come on, man. But when I'm like really angry, I just go in and I process. I'm like, okay, this is a woman. But it wasn't even at her that I got angry. I recorded myself because there was a security guard there and he actually looked like one of those ones that might be able to actually pull me back a little bit. So I leave and for an hour and 20 minutes, I was cussing. I was cussing like I turned into my mother. Cussing. Just like, this woman, and I got a bit of patois in there. I was like, oh my God. And I left and I was so hot, yeah, because in my mind, yeah, it's so easy just to provide good customer service. Either just be like, look, we're closed, come back tomorrow first thing. I won't be here or I will be here and we'll get it for you straight away, man. Really sorry about that. We have to close right now. Then that's cool. You know, I might beg, but it's cool. But don't be complicit in what I'm trying to do and then shut me down. So I was just devastated. And then what I felt like, then I went into this whole thing, yeah, about black people looking out for black people. That was like the second half of my rant. So the first half was about her. It's like, you're a black woman, yeah? Just have my back a little bit. Like, just, you know.
Help me now.
Yeah. I just went on this thing and I was like, these people who take such pride in what they do, but for the wrong reasons. It's like, this is the place where I have power. And I'm going to use it, but not to help people out and make people's lives easier, but then just to show them that I am a supervisor at the town hall. And I just went off in town hall. Sorry, Marvin, you're a public servant. Cool, we need you. Cool. Thank you. Don't fucking... Please don't leave the establishment. We need you in all those buildings. But you know, you're just like... I went on this really long monologue and I realized afterwards, yeah, that I don't even know why I cared that much. Like, and I just said, you know what? I need to go to therapy because I'm cussing people out now. For an hour and 20 minutes about a car parking thing. But can I just say something here? If you work in these spaces, in public sectors, in nurseries and schools, and you drive buses and you drive trains, like if I see a bus driver, a black bus driver, see a black woman running for a bus, yeah, and he doesn't stop and pause and open his door, I have aggression. Like, I want to say something because this is the one area they put us all in the front line for everything, yeah? This is the one area where we have power for each other where it's like, at Tesco, just like, you got the thing? Nah. And you know, if we say to you, brother, have you got the ackee and saltfish? Have you got the last tin? Have you got it? And you know, that means something. Go get my tin, bruv. Don't sit there and tell me about, no, I don't know if it's there. We're out of stock. Go stand up for us. That's what I want for us is to create this like economy of, I'm in a place and what I can do is add little 10% of ease to your day. And I think that that's all we can ask for each other. I don't want you to like save my life. But if you catch me at a bus stop running, stop the bus, bruv. You know?
those old bus drivers, what happened to those old bus drivers, the ones with all the sovereigns and the one glove? Come upstairs, y'all making too much noise. Yeah. What happened to them dons? Where they at? They won't, you know, and they used to see me and the man them come on, and you know, he used to open his thing and be like, yo, no bother with it today.
Yeah.
Where are they? Well, they can't do that no more, can they, Carl? Because the young ones are wild these days, so, you know.
I'm not interrupting any young people. It's not my thing. I don't want to say this for this reason, but literally this morning, I saw a tweet that was trending, and this black woman was saying that she works in a school, and one of her classmates got killed with a knife crime, so she got stabbed. And she watched them for 2 days and how devastated they were. And so she held after school like sessions where they got to speak about how they feel. And so I just sent her some money. I was like, look, every time you see an intervention in the realm that you're in, if you stand in it, powerful things happen. Everything that's great about my life is because someone saw me at 5, 11, 16, 18, 19, 21, 24. These are like pivotal times in my life. And said, I see something in this person. And so come and sit with me, or I'm going to like bring you along my thing, or come to this meeting, or, you know, call this person. And when people do that, you save so much people, and it's so little to you, but it means so much to those people. So I was like, go do something for yourself on the other side of that. And I feel like, in a weird way, that's what we're saying, like, show up in a way that is manageable for you, but really has an impact on others. And I feel like we, you know, my school experience was wild. It was wild. I thought I was going to die for about every day for about 2 years. Like, you just wake up thinking, like, am I going to make it home? Yeah, every day.
School was wild, boy.
Ivy Grove was a thing.
I used to hear stories about my friend got expelled and went to your school. And at my school, if you got into a fight, it's a big thing. And I know that at Ivy Grove, if you got into a fight, you stand in the corner. I was like, what is this place?
That's wild. What was your school experience like? How did you get on? Because I went from being in primary school, I was third best fighter, which is accolade, you're on the podium. And in secondary school, I went from like 11 to like 20 to 50 by the time all the Hackney schools closed. And I was basically just a comedian at that point, because I was like, if I have to, I will fight you, but if I have to fight everybody here, I may not be here anyway. So let me use other tools. What was your school experience like?
So my primary school was brilliant. I went primary school in Tottenham. Enough name brands there. It was good. It was good. It was really eclectic. It was very African, Caribbean, Irish, Filipino. It was, you know, a good mix of everything. And I was like the cool kid, you know. I got all the main parts in the plays and stuff like that. I was a good actor, good at academics. It was nice. And then I went into secondary school, and it was very white, very, very white, middle class white, which was, it just put a different spin, and everything that my parents had ever warned me about came into play. You know what I mean? So you have to work twice as hard. You know, I always noticed, like, if I was talking, I was out, or someone was onto me, but I see one of my counterparts talking or messing about, and it's like, you know, Peter, allow it. Stop. You know what I mean? But school, I really enjoyed it, and I'm still friends with my boys from school now. We all came together as our unit. And it was Africans and Caribbeans. We all came together in one nice subculture and protected each other, which was nice. And, you know, like this space, we created our own safe space. You know what I mean? And supported each other, especially like if you had, cause our school was really strict. So you couldn't have short haircuts. So if you went away for half term, you had a skin fade. We had one teacher that would walk around looking for people with skin fades. And a man of them would be like, yo, like, you know, Mr. X is down there. Don't go down there. Be like,
are you serious?
Yeah, bro, we have to cut, man. Yeah. Wow. I got suspended from school every year, every single year, various things, but every single year.
If they got you, bro, there was no chance for me. And the thing is, I wasn't bad. I was just cheeky. Like I had something to say, and it's basically my life now. I just, you know, I didn't have any power back then to hold my own space, but now I try and tell people to shut up. It's like, bro, I'm done. I live my own life. I don't care about you.
So I was really like, I was very cheeky, but very smooth with it. So I remember one teacher, Miss Meekins, she was actually a really nice teacher, and I was talking in class, and she was like, you know, the next person who talks, half an hour detention. I was like, cool. So anyway, my bridging, talking. I think we were playing Battleships. So talking, she's like, Marlon, half an hour detention. And I was like, Miss Meekins. I'd love to come to your detention, but you know, the way my household is set up, my dad, I need to be home at 4:30, so I can't attend. And it took her a while to compute what I actually had said. Because it wasn't like, I ain't coming to your detention, mind you, it wasn't that. She was like, no, you didn't. But, and then she was like, oh, how dare you speak to me like that? Kicked me out of the class and all them things. So that was the basis of my cheat. I was very, you know, cheeky, but, you know, in a smooth, if you knew the sense of humor, then you cottoned onto it real quick. You know what I mean? So
what's really interesting here is my nephew's 15 right now, and he's in that space, but he's the child of a modern middle-class, wonderful, well-provided for family. He's fine. Yes, don't worry. He's good. Good. Yeah. He's not filled with trauma in that sense, but like, he, you know, it's funny watching him live a life that we created as the dads that we try to be. Do you know what I mean? Like, my brother's like amazing. He's like one of those superhero dads that slightly make you sick, but at the same time, you know, you do your job, but you know, it's all picket fences. And he's a very like all my masculinity training comes from him. He's got patience that I do not have. He has like values. He's like, no, we shouldn't do that. I'm like, what do you mean? Let's just do it. Let's just go. And he's like, so I think, in that sense, it's great, but watching my nephew grow up is so beautiful to see what a product of our hard work can actually create. Because really, we don't know on mass, because I think my brother is like early 40s, so he's probably the first generation of the slightly more conscious parenting, the slightly more evolved approach of like stable home and families at mass. So there's a lot more friends of his age that are in like marriages or long-term relationships or super proactive parenting. Because even if they're not together, like if you travel to your children, like there's one of his friends was traveling to Wales and like seeing, like making it a practical thing. So, you know, that's the first, it's nice watching my nephew, because I think the other day, it's so funny because he came up to me and he was just like, oh, come on, we haven't really had a good conversation in a while. I just wonder, how's everything going for you? I was like, what? How can I help you? What do you mean? Like, and I turned into my girlfriend, my mum, my gran, like my big people business. I tried to go into all that. But really, he's right. He's 15. He's noticed that I live and I exist and he sees what I do. He's asking, how am I doing? And I was like, that's such a powerful evolution because at 15, we weren't allowed to, ask people them business, you know, you mind your business. Even if it's going well, someone turns up with a Porsche, you don't ask no questions, bro. You're just like, okay, thank you. It's a very nice shiny car. Yeah, thanks. Because you ask too much questions, bro. People are like, bro, he's Nino Brown of Hackney, and you got to start asking more questions. So it's so nice to be able to have an environment where 15-year-olds and young adults can start to engage you. And I think that's the forms of success.
Yeah, 100%. I think for me as well, when you look at other races, you know, you'd have your friends where, you know, you have to greet your parents obviously by calling their mum or dad, but you got Tom and he just calls his mum Sarah just casually. And I feel like that translates into adult life as well, in a sense where when they're much more relaxed with adults and seniors in their household, when they get into the workplace, it's the same thing. Where sometimes I think with us, because we've got a lot more respect, we see it as more hierarchical, if you see what I mean. So we struggle engaging with hierarchy and authority. But you say, yeah, you see other people, it's just casual. And I feel like we're getting a bit more like that. Not too much to the point where we lose respect. But I think, yeah, you need a bit more of that relaxed approach at times.
Do you remember having to pattern up your friends before they come to your house?
Hell yes.
Get in there, be like, bro, tuck in your shirt. Like,
hell
like
yes.
Just comb your hair out a bit. Mr. and Mrs. Bruce, okay? Mr. and Mrs. Bruce, right?
It was essential.
And then you go in, you get me? Not none of this loud business. Don't talk about the waz we was talking about earlier. Don't mention none of that. All right, cool.
Like, I do it now.
In it, and be like, this is how you're living. This is how I'm living, bro.
Yeah. I do it now. I do it as a grown-ass man right now, bro. I took my friend, I'll never forget, I was working in music and there was this amazing guy called Victor that I was working with. He's Nigerian. But like, you know, he's like, what? And there's another thing about like men who are like under 28. I hung out with one of them the other day and I was like, you motherfuckers.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Got no shit. It's like too happy, too free. Man's doing TikTok dances on his bike, happy. I was like, you don't know pain. Anyway, so I told my friend there who's from Nigeria descent, and I took it to my grand's house, and I was like, look, this is my grand. Okay, was born in 1932. So you know. And her relationship with Nigerians when she came to this country was that they brought, you know, a particular culture to the black experience after her being here for 25 years and fighting for equality and justice. And then she felt like, you know, some Nigerians undid that with some reputational things around fraud and deception. And so she may not be as warm. She may not understand fully. So just be, you know, she's cool though, but like, you know, just be aware of that. So my friend comes to sit down. He's like, she's talking to him like, oh, where are you from? And then obviously, because we're black, we don't answer like, you know, in terms of London. We're like, oh, he's that Nigerian. And she goes, Miss Sari. Grand.
No, granny, no.
No, I'm Miss Sari. And I was like, no, I think he's proud about it. Yeah. Okay, cool. Anyway, we're gonna go. Good to see you. Love you so much. And it's funny because how that like whole divide, but there's things that we just learn and the principles that we had from that time that just I want that translated into our children. I want the Caribbeanisms in my children, but also I'm not gonna beat them. And I'm also not gonna like force them to eat their food at the table. Even if they're not hungry. So those little things that you think actually they're not healthy, but you start to slowly erode some of the cultural things, and it's difficult to know what to keep and what to retain. What in your in your parenting, what would you keep and retain from your parenting?
I think the eating at the table is, so we eat at the table every day, whether it was midnight or, you know, we all sat as a family together at that dining table, and then things were discussed at that dining table, like your performance for that day, whose teacher called, what you want to do for the rest of your life. And we went over that again, and my dad he'd be onto it. What do you want to do? How are you going to do it? How are you going to get there? And he sort of drilled into you. So that bit I'm going to bring. The respect for elders and other people's families, that is paramount. You don't go into someone's house and, you know, just call, like, I've got a good friend. She's Irish, and she keeps telling me, no, you can call my dad Seamus. And I'm like, nah, I'm going to call him, you know, Mr. in your surname. And she's like, nah, call him Seamus. I was like, this has been going on for about 20 years. I just can't call him by his, you know, by his first name. You know what I mean? So I'll carry that too. The whole beating culture, that's out. Like, you know, that's archaic. Don't believe in it at all. I don't think it works. I think it leads to resentment. And, you know, the pain in my daughter's face when I increase screen time. You know what I mean? The pain that she feels when I remove her phone, the pain she feels when I take those remotes, she got a TV and Sky, just take all of that, you know, just remove them luxuries. The pain in her face when I'm like, you're not going to see your mate today because you're being bloody cheeky today, you know, it outweighs going in and patterning. You know what I mean? We'll have to do that no more. So yeah, that, and you know, just that the warmness, you know, having an open house, you know, being a bit like, you know, letting friends or, you know, open door, like, you know, my gran was quite similar to your gran, was had a very open house, always had friends coming through and whoever, you know what I mean? So be an Irish lady, African lady, whoever, Nigerian, whatever, everyone could come through and talk. And that's how you learn about life and cultures. So, you know, all of that entire experience is important.
Yeah. What about you, Marvin?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think much the same of what Marlon said. And I think what Marlon was touching at the end as well, I think that my home was very much like a safe space. I felt like, especially like where I live, I'm from Lewisham, but I wasn't like in the center of Lewisham. So growing up, yeah, blue blower, apparently. but yeah, I went in the center of the mayhem at times. So so certain times on the weekend, in the summer holidays and stuff like that, things would happen on the street, obviously. But I felt like when I came home, it was a safe space. I felt like my mum, my dad, you know, my siblings, they respected me, they loved me. I felt comfortable at home. And I grew up with friends that didn't have that at home. They wanted to get out of their house. Like any drop of the hat, they were quick to want to get out of their house. It could be raining, it could be snowing. They want to be on road, they want to be at someone else's house. But I felt like I always had that love and respect, that safe space. There was always food for me. You know, I was always going to get that love and attention. And even when I was perhaps going off the rails or weren't behaving, I was never chastised in that type of way that made me want to leave my house. So I think, yeah, that's what I'd want to create for my child as well. That, you know, home is always where you can lay your head. There's always going to be a plate for you. There's always food in the fridge. Things like kicking, especially when you've got a male child, I think things like kicking your child out or force them to want to be out of the house or not bring their friends around. I think there's so much destruction and death and mayhem on the roads that if you can have them at home, keep them at home. You know, if they want to, even with me, when I was growing up with my younger brother, like, because I spent so much time, you know, doing things when I was younger, when he was growing up, he's about 6 years younger than me. I made sure he had a PlayStation. I made sure he had the game. Everything he needed was in the house. You didn't need to be on road. Whereas
did you just intimate that you were like a reformed gangster? Is that what you
said? No, not at all. There's no.
Are you sure? Yeah. You can talk about it. No one listens to this, Eddie. No one listens.
It's good.
Yeah. Tell us about your crime.
No, do you know what I think? It's just proximity. I think sometimes you're just in a proximity of other things happening. But yeah, we might get to that on another podcast.
I love the curation of that language. You're in the vicinity of things happening.
No face, no face, isn't it? That's...
you're literally going to be writing speeches for Boris Johnson by the end of this year. I swear to God.
If I write for Boris, I'm getting kicked out. Like, I'll just, yeah, I'll put some subtleties in
there.
But
I hear you with that, though. The spontaneity thing, because, you know, you hang around as one big group. Mm. Like, you may just want to frequent McGreen, and then someone in the group that you don't really know from another estate does absolute madness, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
I go to school in Finchley. What is this? I'm going, Dad.
They're doing come and collect again. Me. Yes, come and collect me.
They're doing crap. It's Wood Green. Wood Green. The top of Wood Green. They're doing wild. They're giving back his Walkman.
His Walkman.
Stealing batteries.
What I love, yeah, is that, like, I always think my mum was, like, all action. And so when we talk about black superhero mothers, it's quite a stereotype. And that's just probably problematic in some ways. But she was just all action. She didn't miss very much. You know, my mum was known for, like, imagine, like, there's, like, 8 blocks in an estate. She would call from block number 2 and I would get it in block number 8. I would hear it. And if I didn't hear it, people would run towards me from any block in between and be like, your mum is calling you. And then they'd be like, pa, pa. You know, like how now as kids, it's kind of like you call them and then they finish what they're doing. They tend to be like, pause. Yes. Yeah. How can I help? And then like that, me, it was like the voice left. And as it entered my ear, it was like almost like a drone. Yeah. It was like, drop what you're doing. You missed the open goal. You stop. You turn around and you start running home. I was like, Mom, I can hear you. So I'm coming. Because you knew if my mom got to free calling me 3 times and didn't hear me say I'm coming, oh my Lord. Because she had to put on her jacket to come outside to find me. War Aguan. War. And so, and I say that because like her words meant something to me and it meant that I needed to be wherever her word was telling me to be. I think there's a value in that, but she never made it combative. And so even though I'm saying this respect, I'm running home because I know her consequences were always so clever and Machiavellian. She used to just slightly just strip me just a little bit. You know when you get sexy and you're like, nick, 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 and they'd be like, no TV for a week. You'd be like, okay, fine, I don't care about that. Fine, I'll be fine. Then you realize there's a point in the day, yeah, where your whole family is watching and you can't watch.
Yeah,
it's the only thing going on in your house. And you're like, I can't watch Gladiators. Yeah. What do you mean?
I'm blind date, the cycle.
Yes. What? And so I think there's like a really beautiful value. And I think the type of, I don't want to say punishment, but the type of consequences that were put in place were really, really valuable because they made me think and they made me make choices. But then, you know, for me, I was someone that if you put me under pressure, I will ride to the absolute nub of the thing is dead, and then I will take whatever and I'll be fine, and then I'm coming back. So I used to obviously still continue doing what I wanted to do. Mine was really about freedom. I wanted to exercise my boundaries. And, you know, I had a business that I was trying to run, and like I couldn't explain it to her what I was doing, but I was like, I was making money, so isn't that all right? And she was like, no, you gotta be home by 10. And then like I used to always go to this party in Stoke Newton. It's called Cheeky Bees, and it was like a under 16 space. It basically was a shop, underground basement in a shop. And you used to go there, and between like 6 and 10, they play garage music. Dun, 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 dun. And I used to go. So, and I used to steal my brother's clothes. He hated my guts, steal his aftershave, go to this party and like party from like 6 on the dot. So we'll be outside 5:55, party all the way until like 10, 5, I mean, to 10, 4 to 10. Maybe 5 to 10, and then run from Stony and Horn Road to Dalston to Dubovo, where my family lived, yeah? And every single week I'd get it wrong and miss the thing. So I'd be grounded the whole week, released on Friday, and then do it again. And so my mum was just like, do you know what? 1 month, you should have saw the brokenness. Oh, I was like, man.
Yeah.
What do you mean? And like, and the idea of missing that, and you start missing girls, but I also missed all the crime. So my mum saved me from tons of stuff that I didn't know, because I would have been that guy that Marvin was talking about. I would have been just out there, like, and then someone gets, like, something happens to them, and you're like, oh, and then they just round us all up. And it's like, because my mum said, you can't go da-da-da-da, and you have to be in, it meant that I missed one of the worst summers in Hackney history, where there was, like, a Hackney-Tottenham beef, and then something happened where Hackney didn't back Hackney in one thing, and then so it turned into a Hackney-Hackney beef, and then everyone was just, like, going jail and wild stuff. And I was like, oh, I'm at home. I like it here. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to listen to hip hop.
And learn the words.
Yes, that's literally, bruv, I used to write out the lyrics, bruv, for songs and be like, But ironically, I never became an MC. But I think it's really interesting that, like, you know, you play that role and your parents can save you from really big things with just some really nice guidance and frameworks. Is there anything else? What do you think was the most important lesson? Because mine was about, my mum taught me about women. And that's one of the things that I think, especially now when you see how people are interacting with women, she taught me how to interact with women in a really powerful way, informed way, clean way, and about integrity. And like, because there was an era around what was it called, that battery, or like where people would have sex multiple back to back, and footballers were doing it, and then there was like these multiple rape like convictions and all these things that happened in this very particular period. And I was like, ugh, I ain't doing that. You know, you're like, there's just a code in your head that's like, that's bad. But other people were just like, oh, okay, this is what we do, yeah? And just like, and they had to go to jail. And like, I'm not saying that's okay. I'm just saying there clearly wasn't a conversation had in their house where they thought about what the consequences of what that could be on a human level. And I had that information. And I just think, you know, you navigated quite, and now we're in an era where women are speaking really powerfully about how they're treated. I can sleep really calmly because there's nothing, there's nothing there. So and that's a very rare, and you know, not every man feels that way. So I'm grateful for that because it's a really important thing. What was the thing that you think, like, for you was the home run of information that you're glad that your parents gave you?
I mean, so I wasn't allowed to just bring chicks to my house willy nilly or bring girls to my house. You know what I mean? So I had to have respect for women. It just wasn't an option in my house. And that was from my dad. You pedestal women. You know, I had my sisters. Even if I thought about, you know, when you first got your mobile and someone called, be like, I can't talk at the moment, right? Be like, that better not be a girl you're talking to. You know what I mean? I just wasn't allowed to do that. But take home lesson. What was the most important thing? I don't know. There's just so many, isn't it? We just tell me your friends and I'll show you who you are.
Yeah. What do you think the moment was that kind of like shaped you? Because obviously, like, we're basically all saying that we were around a lot of stuff, never actually was the main proponent of the stuff, but we were around a lot of stuff. What was the moment where you were like, I you know what, I'm so glad I navigated that? Did you have one of those things where something big happened around you and you were like, that little moral just saved me from being too close to something that definitely would have changed the course of my life?
Yeah. Do you know what? I think my dad queffed my ego enough in the house for someone to bump into me and not want to kill them. You know what I mean? Like my ego was suppressed enough, and he really, him and my mum really taught me like what was right and what was wrong. You know what I mean? And just how you should genuinely treat people. And so my dad did martial arts as well. So it was disciplined. You don't go outside and exact violence. You just don't go out and batter people. So, you know, when we first started going clubbing and you're seeing all these dons in a rave, and then it just goes off. What the hell are you fighting for? I went to Probitos. I spent £60 on a shirt.
Probitos!
A Visu shirt. Okay, I've got jeans on. They're Voi, but allow me. I'm not getting
Voi.
I'm not getting
Can you contextualize Probitos for those who don't know what Probitos is?
It's a shop just off Oxford Street, and it's where they sold designer clothes. And if you went in there early enough, before all the drug dealers went in there, you could get a good deal, because then they'd know that you'd only had £40 and you want to get a shirt for £60, but they'd just allow you. But basically it was where there was like about maybe three or four shops in London that, you know, you'd come in with your one £40 that you've been saving up 2 years for. And then all the drug dealers would come in and just buy out the shop, and they're like, huh?
Oh, I know. Do you know what phase I really regretted, yeah, was the Iceberg history with the cartoon characters. I could never participate. And Avrex. I could never participate. I couldn't afford it.
Don't make me go and get my Avrex. I still got mine.
Are you serious, bro?
I still got it, bro.
Bro, take pictures, bro. We're going to post this, bro, with a trailer, bro. You still got your Avrexes, bro. You were one of those guys. I couldn't afford one. And the second that I thought I could, yeah, people were robbing people for them so aggressively, bro. That's the first time I ever saw a knife, is my friend had the nerve to go get a secondhand Avrex jacket and walk next to me. And some boy just came up to him with a knife and they were like, take that off now.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, I don't want one of those.
You know what? I had plaits when I was younger. You know, like the Spragger Benz, I had the mad plaits. So I always think people were never too sure how to take me. He's either mad serious or he's not. And because I was affiliated through school and playing football, so, you know, sometimes I'll go out with the man them on the cusp, okay, just on the cusp. And because we did club nights as well, so people were never quite sure where to go with it. So, and I could speak, you know what I mean? I knew that through martial arts, you know that if 10 people approach you, one of them's serious.
Yeah.
And what comes out of your mouth the first, and how you position yourself and, you know what I mean, will dissipate a lot of things. So I learned that very quickly. And, you know, the both the schools I went to, you were tested all the time. Remember, I had to come through with green in a different uniform.
Wow.
That's it. I had to come through with green every day in a different uniform. And
how do you think all of that shaped you as an adult, though? Because sometimes I talk about trauma in some really casual ways. Just like, oh, I almost went to jail and 6 of my friends died and 8 of my friends went to prison. And you just say it so casually and sometimes maybe too lightly. And I don't really respect, like, who, you know, because that all that's still in me when I'm, you know, when I'm cussing and all that, and I'm when someone engages me in an unhealthy way, you know, I return to my 16-year-old self. I'm like, yo, I gotta defend myself. I can't allow myself to be fully mockeried, because, you know, in your mind there's a consequence to being fully disrespected and nothing happens. Like, it still just lives in you. Like, and I think a lot of black men have that legacy. And sometimes people deal with you in the present and they see this like, oh, he does very well for himself. He speaks on the news and he's caring. But like, they don't understand that I still have Hackney training. So it's a bit like going to martial arts school or going to like X-Men school. You still know how to use your powers. And so, and I was thinking about this the other day. It's like, someone did something really disrespectful to me. And I was just like, You have to understand that, like, yes, this is, I am this person, but a part of my personality will, which is what I call it, is a person who will want to drag you down on the floor. Because, and also I know fuckery's people. I know them. You know what they look like. You know what they say. Yeah. You know how they, you know it. So when you do fuckery's things around me, just because I'm grown doesn't mean I've lost the DNA of identifying fuckery's people. I still see you. So, and I think ultimately, like, my mom's way, or way I know culturally, it's just very confrontational. I don't mean physically. I just mean, like, we will stand in the thing and be like, move yourself, and tell you about yourself. And that's culturally a part of us in a way, as well as being able to go in and articulate as well. But it's like, I feel like where we deal with each other sometimes is because, I don't know. There's something there where we deal with each other in a way that's probably unhealthy. I don't even think what I'm saying is right. I'm saying it happens. I know it. I access it when I need to, because I know you understand that more than guys. What we're saying is that actually the rules and integrity, sometimes when I talk to some people about that type of stuff here, they look at me and I can see them thinking like, this guy's an idiot, or like, I'm going to push further. Or they want to test to see if it's real. Whereas, like, when you do that in other circles, they just take you for what you're saying. And I feel the way we deal with each other means that it keeps that alive. It keeps that, like, cold alive of, like, I may have to choke you out.
I think, and I think as well, to an extent, we need it, because you know, if something's happening, you can't try and be peaceful, try and be the mediator, try and, you know, kneel down and meditate when you need to defend yourself. And there's a whole raft of situations that you can need to defend yourself against. So I do think you need that edge. I think it's like when Malcolm X said, by any means necessary. It's like, if you're peaceful, we're peaceful, but you touch one of us, we're touching one of you. Like, I think it's that kind of, unfortunately, you need it. But it's about mediating it as and when, because it gets like that sometimes. It gets on top and, you know, you can't, we touched on it before, but regarding the police, I think, you know, even one of the reasons why I think the community has no confidence in the police is, one, because of how they treat us, but two, even when we rely on them, they don't solve our crimes, they don't solve things that happens in our community.
No.
And I think that's where the notion has come from, people wanting to take it into their own hands, because they're like, you know, if I call the police and do X, Y, Z, that's it, we can't do nothing else in the situation, and that person's going to bust case. But if I take it into my own hands, then I feel like I can resolve the situation. And I think that's like what you're saying there. I think that's something that afflicts us. And, you know, we need to stop that behavior. But at the same time, we need the systems in place to work on our behalf as well.
That's really powerful, man. I feel like that's a clip for me, because I in many ways, like, I know what's right. But when I try to engage in the concept of rightness and move in that way, I just find people don't respect that framework anyway. So if I tell you I'm going to call my solicitor, people just look at you like, what? Yeah, exactly. And you know, like, I'm going to call the police, or no one. And even the timing of how long it takes for due process, so long. By that time, you've sat in a traumatic event for now weeks on end. And I just don't think we're just built for that level of patience, because it's always on top. It's always that urgent, and it can always go wrong really quickly. But I do think we do need to rely on the systems that we have, because I think when you put your body on your line, or your reputation on the line to, like, cope and survive with, we'll call them blood clots, it can be quite unfair, like, and a little bit imbalanced in terms of, like, what was capable for you now. Because really what you see on paper is, like, a 40-year-old man. I'm not 40, but a 40-year-old man, Marlon is. 40-year-old man.
<He's not. laughs> That's so smooth.
Just yelling into the abyss. So it's super important that we use those things. Guys, look, thank you so much, man. I love that. That was really, that wasn't even what we do in the podcast about, but that doesn't really matter, because we rule our own universe, and we decided to talk about that. But this idea about, like, the legacy of our parenting, what we want to keep, what we want to retain, but also just, like, I do want us to be a bit more mindful about what we've gone through, like, especially, like, Black men, because so many of us grew up in a, like, survive or die mentality and surroundings that I think a little bit still lives in us. And I know it lives in me, and I obviously work really hard to try and, like, suppress it or manage it or evolve from it, but it's still in there. And it's not nice, like, to have to want to deal with people. I want to deal with kumbaya. I like talking to people and conflict resolution in a normal way. But I also know that when you're around people who don't understand that language, you end up having to use other tools to, like, to deal with people. And it's just like, yuck. But this is why I'm in a boundary setting space anyway. So if you get too close to me and I don't like what you say, the cutoff is cold as well. So I'm really sorry. I'll come back, but it's just not the immediacy. You got to take a break. You got to take a seat. Think about it. Let's do some reflection time. You're on your reflection step. I'll see you in 4 weeks. Guys, thank you so much. I really appreciate you joining me this morning, man. Thank you, brothers. I love you.
And so thank you guys for listening. I really much appreciate it. We'll be back next week with another episode. You can find us at Dope Black Dads on all social media platforms. You can also email me for a chat at hello@dopeblackdads.com. Thank you so much for listening, my brothers. I appreciate you all. We'll be back next week.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.